Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Very well, Andrew. Thank you.
Long week. We
Indeed.
also have a special guest, Antonio ADF, and who can talk about we'll talk about UK and Europe, and obviously we saw like borderline historical moves in the front end rates this week. So maybe let's kick off. Let's start with the US first. A little bit less crazy for once. Dominique, what were your biggest takeaways, either comments from the Fed, from the Fed meeting, data, what's happening in the war, market impact, et cetera?
So my biggest takeaway is the market continues to think this war is all inflation, no growth. And that's what I see from the pricing of 25% of Fed hike by the end of the year. And I disagree very strongly. The Fed this week made it clear that the SCP and the discussion of the outlook did not include the war. They said, we don't know enough. So they were a bit more hawkish than I expected. I'm a little surprised because the source of the hawkishness was largely that goods price disinflation is not happening as quickly as they had expected. So while they kept the one cut for this year, they said they wouldn't proceed with the cuts until they were confident that the tariff effect was washing out. Goods are 25% of core inflation, and by contrast, they were quite confident on the other two components of inflation. So I was a bit surprised, but they are the Fed, they are making the decisions, not I, so I changed my call to two cuts this year. And on the war, it's still early days, but it looks to me like it's going to be a long-term conflict. Paradoxically, the measures to cap escalation, which we saw with the hit to the Iranian gas field this week, which was followed by Israel and the US saying that they wouldn't be hitting gas production facilities. So this caps the upside to oil prices, but the paradox is it makes the war more sustainable. So we've also seen sanction relief for Russia and the administration talking about sanction relief on Iran, with the SPA release, Viresh thinks this could cap Brent at 120 for the next few weeks, WTI around 100. Meanwhile, crack spread will continue to increase. So if you look at retail gas and diesel is really important for small and medium enterprises, it's still going up in the vertical line. And I suspect it will continue to do so. So I can't think of how this would not impact business, employment, investment, and eventually growth. So that's the nature of my disagreement with the market, but perhaps I'll stop here because it looks like Europe is where the even more exciting things are going on.
Yeah, I mean, I would have agreed with you, and I think, to be honest, my guess is a lot of investors actually agreed with you, especially seeing how the market reacted. But if they're not worried about growth slowing, and the U.S. is probably in a better position before the war than the U.K. and Europe, certainly the U.K., but also the impact is probably going to be much more negative for the U.K. and Europe because of energy independence. We're far away, less issues around, I guess there's the midterms, but less issues, say, in the U.K. about short-term elections. But hearing what the, let's make a transition to you, Antonio. So hearing what we heard from the Bank of England and the ECB, the Fed kind of thread the needle, if anything. And like, if they said, we're still concerned about growth, we think, you know, we're not really worried about inflation and let's keep two cuts in or whatever, like, imagine what the reaction would have been then, seeing what happened at the Fed and ECB. So to me, it's like the Fed's just kind of keeping optionality. I'm sure, I've thought about this before, I'm sure like the Bank of England, Lagarde, the Chairman Powell, like they all chat. They all probably discuss what they think the market's at. Right. So it's probably not a shock that it was relatively in the same area, but obviously the Fed held to, which would be perceived a much more dovish view, certainly in relation to them. So in that transition to you, Antonio, as our guest speaker today, we're happy to have you joining it. Well, you know, what was your big takeaway? I know you kind of cut some of your UK position before the meeting. What was your rationale? And I'm guessing you're surprised how big the moves are. Yeah.
So the first point, the main takeaway for me is that ECB and Bank of England were clearly more hawkish than the Fed, because they included already the energy shock that the Fed didn't. The Fed was more instead, the other two central banks have been clearly more hawkish. Before the, if I compare the two, the press conference of the ECB, the Bank of England didn't have the press conference. I would say the Bank of England was more hawkish than the ECB. But then after the press conference, you might know that Lagarde left the press conference earlier because she had to catch a flight to Brussels. So she didn't, the press conference was shorter. But then after they published two hypothetical, more severe scenario, in which oil prices remain higher for longer and so on. And in particular, there were comments of the records of ECB saying that April could be live as a meeting. So when I consider this, I would say ECB has been more hawkish than the Bank of England overall, and both more hawkish than the Fed. The second point I want to make is that this kind of makes sense in the general picture, because as we know, the Fed has a dual mandate, employment and inflation. Instead, the other two central banks are just inflation. And last point I want to make is that clearly the ECB, we know before the war, the policy was in a good place, and the growth was at potential with inflation at target. Instead, in the case of the Bank of England, is growth was slightly below potential, monetary policy was considered already slightly restrictive, and inflation was kind of coming down with wage. Of course, UK has a more structural inflation problem. So it makes sense to me that if you ask me to think what is going to happen next, is that I don't know what is going to happen with oil price, but if they stay at this level or they stay this level or more, even slightly more elevated for the next 6 weeks, the Bank of England probably is going to hike in April together with the ECB. So I'm making a scenario which for 6 weeks, because the Bank of England mentioned exactly the 6 weeks, they're going to wait and see for 6 weeks the situation. And there were four factors of the Bank of England that were important. First, the vote split was 9-0. So it was more hawkish than everyone was expecting. Second, they said exactly that we are ready to act in April in case in which for the next 6 weeks, of course, the shock remains persistent. So they basically lowered the bar for rate hike. And the last point I want to make is that even if they didn't make forecasts like the ECB, the Fed, informally, they said that the CPI could be up to 3.5 in Q3. So all these elements together show that oil price, just to make it simple, they stay here or they go more elevated in the next 6 weeks, I think there is a good chance they could hike in April. Last point is that I think the ECB will be, in case, if you take the two scenarios that the ECB has published, very short, the most severe one is a very persistent oil shock, really persistent for months. In that case, in the last webinar 1 week ago, I mentioned that I would see an extreme scenario, the ECB hiking 3-4 times. If I take the ECB scenario, I think the ECB could hike more than 3-4 times if I look at their scenario that they published. Of course, they don't attach any probability. So the ECB should, given all the rest fixed, if they hike, if the shock is persistent, they will hike, I think, slightly more than the Bank of England and possibly slightly earlier than the Bank of England. Last point, because you mentioned on markets and so on. So I came into the war, luckily, with a very bearish bias on rate. So we were bearish on the Treasury side, and we were bearish, actually, UK steer versus US SOFR. Then all this bearish view, we basically went neutral during the because of course they went so they went very well and we went neutral. What I was saying is that after clearly during the weekend it looked like the situation was more calm, so I was thinking we could have a tactical bounce in the UK steer market. But then I changed my view before, a few hours before the Bank of England, because I felt that, you know, first there was an escalation in the war. There were very good data in UK on the labor market. So I thought probably the Bank of England would have been probably more hawkish than I would have expected. And second, the escalation in the war, of course, is bearish for UK rates. So that tactical idea, basically, I gave up almost immediately, basically.
But what would make you turn bullish on rates if the war continues? Like, is there a scenario, like we were talking about with Dominique, like, is there a scenario where it's like, oh, crap, it's actually, you know, I think a lot of people's perception was the labor market, you know, the economy in the UK wasn't great before. Is there not a scenario where it's more of a concern that actually it's really hitting the economy as opposed to it's just inflation?
So typically war tend to be asymmetric for rate in the sense that the initial reaction is just that the inflationary concern, they tend to be so much big and then rates tend to sell off. So what I did a couple of weeks ago, actually, yes, a couple of weeks ago, a little bit more, I went into a more bullish view on US rate versus bearish view on German rate. So on a relative basis, I have already the view on, and I think there is room in the next few months to see US rate to come lower with respect to German rate, which today, for example, is not the case, but in general, in the last 2 weeks has happened exactly because of what I said before. The ECB has given the link with the energy, you know, given the fact that it's much sure. more exposed to energy. The German rate and the euro rate have sold off more than the US rate. Today is reversing this. So today the US rate are selling off more than German rate. So as a relative value type of view, I already like it. On a standalone basis, because your question is when is the time to become bullish rate? So yeah. My philosophy at the moment is that it's not over until it's over, which means that there is a huge correlation between all the rates, in particular UK first, German rate second, and US rate third with oil. So I think it's a little bit too early to turn bullish rate at this point, because I feel there is still no easy end of the war scenario. The last point I would make on this, trying to make a prediction, but is this. I see a scenario, for example, what Trump did, no, with Russia releasing the oil, no, is clearly a positive news in the, for the market, because it tends to increase the supply of oil and tend to keep, hopefully, in his hope, the price of oil capped. So it could be that the next week we get some good news on that and oil start to drop together with yield will drop and then equity start to rally. But it doesn't look like it's a stable equilibrium if you think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the underlying situation is still pretty much ongoing. So I feel it's not time yet to turn outright bullish on rate.
Right. Can I just ask guys, from a US perspective, I mean, I'm astonished by the hawkishness of the BOE and the ECB, because Europe is much more, growth in Europe is much more exposed to energy shortages. I mean, those are net importers. We in the US, we are self-sufficient. Also, your economies are more manufacturing driven, we're more services driven. You guys are more driven by external demand, so exposed to any slowdown in global growth than we in the US are. So are your central bankers a little bit paranoid about inflation?
I think the strategy is this. Given that they have an inflation mandate, of course, they look at labor. Before the oil shock, Bailey was ready to cut just because the unemployment rate was going up 0.1%. Mann, that is very hawkish in the committee, was ready to flip and cut before the oil shock in February. He was very close to do. He didn't do, but she didn't do. So, of course, they are very concerned about growth, but they have an inflation mandate, so the first thing you want to do when there is a so big shock is to show strong hands against inflation, because that's the first threat. And then, you know, when the growth problem, let's first address inflation, which is our mandate. And then also because at the moment, the Eurozone has very low unemployment rate. But the recent data, yesterday morning at 7 a.m., was quite good. So employment picked up. So I think as a first meeting, they wanted to give the strong message to the market that they are ready to act. And then, of course, if they hope the situation normalizes, and then they can start to take care more of the employment and growth. But as a first signal, they want to give. They want to be tough on inflation, I think.
So my question is, I'm just looking. So on February 27th, 2-year yields in the UK was at 3.5%. Right now, they're trading 4.5%. Mm-hmm. I don't know, 100 basis points.
That's crazy.
It seems crazy. I mean, from basically, you know, and I understand that the threat of inflation, but like that has to already start being an impact on financial conditions. Like, I'm just surprised that they didn't play it down more to try and kind of calm markets. You have this political situation coming up, I guess in May, right? And if it's a bad turnout for labor, like it's pretty much they're going to move further to the left. And I'm not exactly sure that their main goal is going to be like, how do we reduce spending and bring down yields?
Yes, but that's not the main concern of a central bank in the first week in front of an oil shock that could be potentially very large, I think. So let me answer in two way on the spike on the UK yield. The first, Viresh actually just published a very good note in which he wrote that the rates that have sold off the most, I'm trying to remember, New Zealand and UK, is the one in which the central bank cut the most before. So is the market selling off too much? Probably. As we know, there has been also some positioning unwind and so on responsible for the spike in rate. So it's not just, I think, macroeconomic or a result of the hawkishness of the central bank. And is also basically a consequence of the fact that the market knows that the exposure of UK and the Eurozone to the oil, to the energy issue is very large. And indeed, the correlation is very high between the rate and oil. So all you said is correct, but as a first reaction in the first few weeks, it's not that surprising that these rates sold off the most, because they were cutting quite a lot, in particular, in this case also, we're not talking about New Zealand, but New Zealand and the UK. And second, there was a positioning story. Third is they are single inflation mandate central bank, so at least initially they wanted to give a clear guidance. Clearly, honestly, if you ask me, yesterday the was very balanced. Lagarde is after the press conference that came out this message that they could April could be live, and looking at the scenario, of course they don't attach probabilities. But overall, when I look at the overall picture, it looks like they were on the hawkish side. Of course, I think they all hope that the situation is going to normalize, and therefore it's going to be easy for them to change the narrative and being a bit more less hawkish, because obviously if oil price starts to come down and the war ends, then they are covered. But in case in which does not happen, you have basically front run the situation, I would say, the problem.
Right. Okay. And then just quickly, anything you want to add on market impact, aside from like a political impact from this, from high, I guess, higher inflation, higher yields, I guess both?
No, yes, I think on that, I would agree with what, we are discussing internally with Ben and so on.
Sure.
So absolutely. The political situation is another headwind for the UK. But again, I would say is not in front of an oil shock. If I am Bailey, I would not get, not directly influenced by that. It's not in his mandate. He's going to reply, I'm not going to comment on UK politics.
Yeah.
Bailey.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that he did it. I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
The market's doing, okay, cool. Dominic, anything you want to add into the conversation or bring up more on the US, or
I would just say that one risk from this war could be financial, like for instance a general move up in yields. It means that public debt dynamics are worse, and a key difference with the 1970s, of course, is that we are much more leveraged. So there is also, besides the economic risk, there is also financial risk that this shock could puncture the pockets of vulnerability in our financial systems. So, for instance, private credit is the obvious one.
Yeah, I think, one of the clients who's actually bearish dollars, which was a surprise, his point was, this can make the private credit situation worse. I think my response was, I was surprised, if you think these things are going to play out, they'll probably be worse in the UK and Europe anyway. But I guess we shall see. Yeah, I mean, these are huge moves, and like you said, this may result in government saying, listen, we have to raise taxes. There's secondary effects. There could be an influx of, again, from people from, wanting to leave the Middle East and kind of resettling in Europe. There's a lot of potential secondary effects, and UK and Europe are obviously much closer than the Middle East and can be negatively impacted. So I guess we shall see. Okay. Well, we really appreciate it. It's great seeing you both. Antonio, thank you for joining with great insights. Dominique, thank you as always. Any parting words from either of you guys?
No, good luck. Everybody on the markets is really tricky.
Yeah.
Cool. Have a nice weekend.
Awesome. Thanks. Okay, good luck, everyone. Thanks. Bye.